You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
First off, I want to thank you for listening today. Simply put, really unique experiment we did here. Salescast podcast with Ed, incredible podcast. What they do is they take long form discussions and they break them up into short segments to release a little bit of the conversation at a time. I do encourage you guys, go to the show notes, check out Salescast, subscribe, listen there. But I took all the short segments, there's like six or seven of them, and I brought them all together for one long form listening experience. You guys can get the whole conversation here today. And yeah, I mean, I talk about starting my podcast, I talk about the outreach strategy behind it, the sales strategy behind it, how I've marketed my podcast, how I've built my business. And I really enjoyed this conversation. So instead of listening to it in short segments, today you get to listen to the full conversation all the way through. And I really hope you enjoy it. And I really hope you go to the show notes and subscribe to Salescast with Ed and his team over at Salescast. So, hey guys, enjoy.
Ben talks about whatever he wants. Here's Ben Albert.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Salescast podcast with your host, Ed. Today, my guest is Ben Albert. He is the host of Real Business Connections, a globally ranked top 3% podcast, and the founder, owner, and CEO of Balbert Marketing. Did I pronounce that correctly? Is that what it's supposed to be?
You nailed it. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. Well, hey, I kind of checked you out on LinkedIn, saw that your podcast started right about 2 months after you decided to go on the entrepreneurial journey and start your own agency. What was the initial idea on why you started Real Business Connections?
Yeah, I mean, imagine this, and I'll give you the short version. You're in a cushy sales executive role. Everything's being handed to you. You're comfortable. COVID hits. It's like a bomb just dropped. We all went through it. We can all relate in one way or another. And I'm furloughed from work. Our number one product we sold was video production, and we sold it nationwide here in America. So Texas, California, New York City, everywhere. How are you going to sell video production when there's no travel, there's no in-person, et cetera, et cetera? So No harm, no fall. I get furloughed from work. There's no need for me. So I have no clients. I have a not compete. As I mentioned, Texas, California, New York City. I'm from Rochester, New York, a small city. None of my clients were local. So I had no book of business. I had no connections, and I had a not compete. So where do you start? When I started my firm, again, I was starting from scratch. So I had plenty of time, but I had plenty of drive, and we can get into this. You and I both know podcasting's incredible. So I took a shot. I started a business podcast. It at the time was hyper-local, called Rochester Business Connections. Nowadays, it's called Real Business Connections, so we can reach and help more people. But I started a hyper-local podcast so I could reach out to thought leaders right around the corner in my community via Zoom, but then eventually meet them in person. And the rest is history, man. The entire marketing firm I started was built on connecting through the podcast medium and forming true, genuine bonds with my guests that are now clients, best friends, partners, et cetera, et cetera. So, dude, I love podcasting, and I'm grateful to be here, man. I'm excited for our conversation today.
Oh, yeah. Likewise. It's, I went into it with a similar goal, right? To build connections. To, at the time I was, when 2020 hit, I was, out of a job just like you. I was actually in the travel industry, so imagine how that went.
That will.
Yeah, so, you know, highly commercialized, highly transactional sales, moved into the whole B2B ecosystem. And I think one of the one of the most underrated things that I got to do at the time was I was relearning how to sell, right? I went from B2C to B2B, and I got to have these amazing 40-30 minute conversations with sales thought leaders in the space, ask them whatever questions that I wanted, and learn in opportunities that, you know, if you wanted to have that type of conversation and you wouldn't record it and you wouldn't post it anywhere, it would probably cost you a couple grand. it would be considered as consulting, right? And yeah, so you started out there. What was you initially did it locally, as you said, like a very, very local podcast. What was kind of the struggle of finding guests locally? Because I guess it wasn't the easiest way, right? Like if you go on LinkedIn, you find like somebody from anywhere in the States or anywhere in the world. It's an easier conversation, right? How'd you go about sourcing guests locally?
Yeah, I want to challenge that because I actually think it was easy locally, and I'll explain why. Where I started, I actually used a tool, Sales Navigator. A lot of people maybe know what Sales Navigator is. If not, look it up, LinkedIn Sales Navigator. You get a 30-day free trial. So it is an investment. It's not the cheapest tool out there, but you get a 30-day free trial, and I went hyper-focused on my search. So what I did, I'm a SUNY Brockport alumni. I reached out to SUNY Brockport alumni that are business owners that currently live in Rochester, New York. Now, believe it or not, there's hundreds of those people. So SUNY Brockport College alumni, Rochester, New York, business owners, because I'm starting a business-centric Rochester podcast. The intro was so easy, and I was very green. I didn't have the perfect pitch or the perfect thing to say. I was literally the smallest person in the room. I was the beginner, but it was as simple as saying, "Hey, Edward, you know, I saw you went to SUNY Brockport. Congrats on making it big time, man. I just started my own business, and I'd love to connect." Some people connect, some people don't. Obviously, the ones that don't, I don't start cold calling them, be my friend. I start talking to the people that connected with me. So Edward connects, and I go, "Hey, man, you know, I love Rochester, born and raised. Love Brockport, you know, maybe do a Brockport reference, maybe reference their profile, get hyper personal with them. I'm starting a Rochester business podcast. I'll be honest with you, I don't even have a name yet. I'm thinking like Rochester Connects or Business Connections, or I was just kind of brainstorming with them. I'd love to feature on the show because I think you have great things that you're adding to our community." Dude, it's like the response rate was incredible. For the people that started a conversation, it was like a no-brainer. This guy's from Rochester. We're like-minded. He's trying to elevate the community. And to be honest, I'm miserable because I'm at home alone. I'm not at work. I'm in my pajama pants. COVID sucks. Yeah, let's jump on Zoom and do this. Now, what I did from there is I asked for nominations. So what would happen is I'd have Edward from Brockport on the show. He'd kick ass. I'd do whatever I could to make him look incredible. My follow-up was really good. I tried to provide way more value than I took because you said it. It's like a free consultation. I would have paid for that time, but I'm getting it for free, and I don't have a large audience, so I need to over-deliver for them. And I'd ask for nominations, and not every nomination was from SUNY Brockport. But then you get someone who's from Buffalo, New York, or Syracuse, or Finger Lakes, or another Rochester person. And organically, I just started to create a local tribe. So I actually feel like if I had went national, I would have been like such a tiny fish in such a large pond, and I'd maybe look spammy or scammy or generic. But since everything was so hyper-personalized, no one had received that message before. I was the first person to ever say, "I have a Rochester business podcast. I haven't even named it yet. Will you be on it?" So I was everyone's first. And it was that local community that allowed me to build a baseline where eventually I could rebrand to a national level. but it all started with the local show, which I still run today in conjunction with my national segments.
Yeah, so Sales Navigator is an awesome tool for anybody who's looking to do business podcasting. I would say that it's actually the number one tool for that, because you can go out there and you can build lists and introduce yourself for podcast guest appearances, for getting guests on your show, for podcast swaps. It's the place where everybody's at, right? You're not going to be hitting them up on Facebook. You're not going to be hitting them up on Instagram. It's got to be LinkedIn, and Sales Navigator makes LinkedIn a much more, just a much more cerebral platform. You get to see things. You get to make lists. It's no longer just a guessing game. It's no longer just clicking through profiles. You're making a very, very conscious and very, very targeted outreach just in general. So that's great advice for any podcaster. And, you know, kudos to you on starting on such a niche, right? Because one of the biggest things that we teach at Salescast for people who are starting to get into podcasting is trying to please everybody and trying to be as generic and as general as possible is typically not a great idea, because you might get new viewers, your guests might be great at promoting, but your attention's going to suck. Because they are going in to get one thing, and then the next episode is going to be something completely else. They're going to drop interest, and they're going to drop you. Because, you know, today in this environment with all the podcasts that we have out there, I wouldn't say that it's... I would actually challenge the idea that there's too many podcasts out there, but there is definitely not a lack of content and not a lack of relevant content. So, you know, kudos to you on starting with such a small niche, and I would assume, I would make that assumption that the Rochester crowd has started listening to your show, started listening to it because it was the most relevant business podcast to them, and also have been following you ever since then, right?
Yeah, I mean, you type in, well, it's called Rochester Business Connections. You type in Rochester Business Connections, obviously I come up first on Google, but I did this on lunch today. I typed in Business Connections, and I came up first on Google. So I'm in front of BNI for Business Connections. Again, the way Google works is it searches your local area. Mm-hmm. So it automatically, so if you, Edward, were to search Business Connections, I wouldn't come up first. But if someone in my area code types in Business Connections search, I come up first in Rochester, New York, in front of BNI, in front of everyone else, because I'm creating so much content for the local community. Google has indexed me as the top guy. So there you go.
Awesome. So your SEO game is absolutely on point.
Yeah.
So when you started with the business, and you know, any start of a business is scary. There's a lot of uncertainties. Did you see a real spring in, you know, because I assume that podcasting wasn't your only channel of how you were trying to acquire clients, right? What was there a big difference that you saw between the relationships that you were building by the conventional standard sales process versus the podcasting process? And was that something that like appeared like instantly, or was it kind of a slow burn?
It's a slow burn. One thing that's major for any podcaster, any entrepreneur, or anyone getting started, is you kind of have to detach from outcome. There was a time where I was in a more corporate role where we had a list of endless leads, endless opportunity, and it was actually frowned upon if I wasn't getting deals on a very, at the very least, a weekly basis. As a small business without this huge entity, I'm not getting deals on a weekly basis. Sometimes I go a month without a major deal, but as a small firm, one large client completely moves the needle on everything. So it was a slow burn. The first client I got, this is the craziest thing ever. I register an LLC because I thought I had to, even though I technically didn't, but I register an LLC. Woo, I'm a business owner. A charter school reaches out to me and says, "We found your podcast on Google. Will you teach podcasting to our students?" Because charter schools had went virtual. So before you know it, I was teaching podcasting to two separate schools, two separate high schools, as a third party. So my first client was actually me just educating high school students on podcasting. It was not the marketing firm that I had started. But with podcasting, you know, I picked up a real estate agent. I picked up a tech startup, another real estate agent, so on and so forth. But it's not like I gained all these clients right off the bat. I had to be patient enough to start branding myself, to start building goodwill, to start creating connections and relationships. And then, to be honest, like, I have a sales background, but I don't even sell anymore because the clients come to me when they're ready because they know who I am. They know what I'm about. And then you need to be patient because you do, if you stand the test of the time, if you stick to it, it comes back around to you and it all works out. And right now I'm kicking ass, man, and I'm proud of it.
Recent statistics show that, you know, with dark social becoming this huge, huge, huge topic in the revenue space, a lot of what research is showing is that 80% of the buyer's journey is done prior to them contacting anybody at your firm, meaning that people are making educated decisions to get in touch with you when they need you. And it is absolutely impossible for anybody to do that without without a content strategy being given by their vendors. So I believe that podcasting is one of the most authentic and best ways that you can do it, right? Because instead of just looking at some overproduced corporate video of, oh, we're so awesome and, you know, the grass is the greenest here and we have the statistics to prove it, it's more of like an authentic conversation where you get to hear the opinions, the flow, and just get to know the people that you're planning to be in business with, the people that you're planning to buy from, the people that you're planning to work with. And I mean, what other platform really gives that, right? Everything else just doesn't have that rawness to it. And, you know, podcasts are produced like crazy, right? And there's cuts and there's edits and you take out the ums and the ahs and everything else. But at the same time, it's still as authentic as it's ever going to get in a business content strategy.
I'm with you. And podcasts sound better if you get out the ums and the ahs and you edit it well. I don't even do any of that. It's raw. I record an intro. I record an outro. We have a conversation. You're either in it to share the time with us or you're not. But there's no BS, there's no faking it, there's no script. It's just an authentic conversation that you get to jump in on, which I love to do as a listener. I know personally when I listen to someone's podcast, and I was just at a convention, the Growth Now Summit, good friend of mine, Justin Shank, the Growth Now Movement, he put on his summit. I already knew him through his podcast. So when I had an opportunity to meet him, it's a one-sided rapport, but there was so much rapport built where I felt like I knew him well. And now it's just my job for him to get to know me, but it's almost like a weird lurking thing that goes on. Someone can kind of peer into your life and learn from you, and you have an opportunity to mentor them. So when they're ready to help, they can come to the table and then you can have a fruitful relationship together.
Yep. And you can just click from the beginning. It really is awesome. So let's talk about audience size, because you have hit top 3% of global audience in your category, which is, you know, that's awesome, right? And you haven't been doing it for that long. I mean, there are people out there who run their podcasts for years and they don't get that type of results. What have you seen be your audience trends? Because, you know, we've managed a bunch of podcasts. We've seen a lot of growing trends. We've also seen, you know, just pure flatlining, retention and even drops depending on what's going on. So was it always kind of like a steady growth, or was there like was there an event that really took you to the next level audience wise?
It's both. I wish I understood audience metrics. It's wild. It's a little bit of both. To give you a weird example, I looked at Chartable, which helps you track where you are on the charts. At one point, I peaked 4 in entrepreneurship in Peru.
That's awesome.
I don't know why. Right now, I'm like 48th in Peru in entrepreneurship, but I peaked at 4. I have no clue why. One of the least favorite episodes, I'm not going to say which one it was, but I'd say it was not least favorite, but bottom 25. I didn't think it went well. I had no clue what I was talking about. I feel like I didn't ask insightful questions. But I don't know. It blew up, and I don't even know why. Like, I don't even know, like, how it blew up. But this one episode, for example, was over 50% of my listens for a month. So I put out an episode, wow, and this episode was outranking these other episodes that were brand new. And I really actually genuinely don't know why. So it goes up, it goes down. I had Hala Taha on my show. Hala Taha does Young and Profiting podcast. She's a big shot. She's at Ed Mylett, Andy Frisella, Deepak Chopra. Like, everyone you can imagine has been on Hala's show. So she came on my show, and her team really enjoyed the interview. So we kind of collaborated, and she replayed that interview on her stream. So Young and Profiting podcast, they probably get 20 times, if not 50 times more listens than I do. But since she replayed my podcast on her stream, it was free advertising. And I don't know how many listens that got on her show. A tiny residual amount comes over to my stream. But even if only 5% of Hala's listeners digressed over to mine, again, that month I went up by 10, 20%, and then it tapers up, down, up, down. So long story short, Edward, I'm just speaking from my experience. But audience growth is a complicated thing. And if anyone's a master, I recommend you bring them on the show and introduce me to them, because I'm very curious as to how to grow it perfectly and how to track it well.
Yeah. So people who say that they know exactly who their podcast audience is or how it's growing are usually either in a very, very niche environment. And I'm talking like, you know, accounting software for people over 30 niche or, you know, but other than that, you never really know, right? You get some statistics, you get some idea, and you kind of understand your own marketing efforts. But at the same time, you know, a lot of your growth is going to happen behind the scenes. And one of the things that I've talked with salespeople who are podcasting about is the level of frustration that they feel creating content, because it takes the control out of their hands. As you mentioned before, you had a corporate role where, you know, leads were plentiful. So when you're in a position like that, you're used to having a lot of control over what you're doing. You know, okay, I'm going to spend this amount of time doing this, and it's probably going to result somewhere from X to Y in revenue or in growth or in hitting your targets. But with content creation, it can be a very, very slow burn. It can go up, it can go down, it can go sideways, and a lot of times you won't know why. Like you mentioned that one episode that went, you know, 50% of your viewership for the month. Maybe somebody dropped it in a Slack community of 10,000 members saying, hey, this was interesting, I liked it, and a bunch of those members checked it out. Maybe somebody tweeted about it. Like, who knows? Like, It's at the point where it's impossible to track, right?
I wish they tagged me.
Yeah, I wish they tagged you, huh? Yeah. But you know, it's interesting. It's unpredictable, but it's still kind of like a gamble factor, which I think most people also enjoy, right? There's always the thought in your head that, you know, hey, maybe if I do a really good job, maybe it's going to blow up like crazy. Maybe this happens, you know, maybe this will change my life in, you know, tenfold. But those kind of false dreams, in a sense, are also a big demotivator for a lot of people. Because, you know, seeing stuff go sideways, I think two people suffer from it most. It's people who trade stocks, and it's podcast hosts. Those are the two type of people who, when they see something go sideways, they get upset. Did you ever have a real point where you thought, you know, hey, maybe this isn't for me, maybe this isn't working out? Did you have a point where you felt stuck in your podcasting journey?
Only when trading stocks right now. Because the market is tanking.
Now it's not going sideways anymore. Now it's crashing and burning.
I want to say yes, but no. you know, days go by where I want to reduce my frequency. I said it before, you need to detach from outcome. And I realize, I know this for a fact, if I were to spend, you know, a lot of time on research, make a list of names, and start cold calling people, I could probably get sales quicker. I could get revenue quicker. But by doing that, I'm not really building my brand. I'm not really networking. I'm not really creating content. So you have to ask yourself, do I want the revenue now, whether or not it's sustainable, or do I want to build a brand and a platform that's going to allow revenue to stream in consistently for the rest of my career? With my knowledge, I could just quit my job and go work for a company or go do this for another company and make a lot more money today. So it can be discouraging at first, but I know that the long game's in my favor if I stay resilient. So I've never wanted to throw in the towel, but I do kind of like question myself. I'm like, Ben, you know, you kind of want to go on vacation. Don't you want some more money? It's like, no, dude, it's not about the money. The money will come if I do the right thing. So yes and no. I've never wanted to throw away the towel, but I do challenge myself, which honestly just makes me work harder at the end of the day.
Yeah, there's, you know, that type of instant gratification and even taking positions where you know you're going to have to potentially sell your soul for more profits. I totally get that. Like I went into a job at 19 and worked there until I was 23, 24, where, you know, the money was good, the work was good. It was everything and more than I had thought I would achieve at a young age, but there was no growth. There was no learning. It was just literally, you know, selling the same thing to the same type of person, using the same process. I'd say that during those 4 years, I figured out how to sell that one thing and I sold it well, and that's it. Coming out of 2020, after that, being kind of like a fish in, you know, a fish out of water, I realized that, you know, of course it's important, you know, how much you're making and what you're doing and how comfortable of a life you can have today. But you have to look at other growth factors. Like, for example, is this something that I might scale to a point where, at a younger than average age, I'd get to retire? Or is this something where I can learn the type of skills that would make me recession proof? And I think that word is going to be very, very popular because, you know, things are looking a bit rough coming here in June of 2022. So yeah, those are always things to consider. And, you know, a podcast and just content in general, it's just another growth avenue, right? It's just another growth avenue at the end of the day. If you don't look at the money, you don't look at the audience, it's a growth avenue. It's another skill that you can write in your resume that you know how to implement and how to successfully utilize for any future position that you're going to take.
Yeah, and I want to circle back to what you started with. I get free consultation calls and I get mentorship from brilliant people. So even you can't monetize that, you know, it's something I would pay for. But no matter what I do in life, because of those free consultations, because of those connections, I'm a better person and I'm growing as a person. And can you really put a monetary value on that? I don't think you can.
Thanks for listening to Ben's Bites. If you enjoyed today's bite, be sure to share it with a good friend. Do you have a suggested topic? Reach Ben at ben@valbertmarketing.com. We'll talk to you soon.